Chaitanya-manobhishtam tapitam yena bhutale svayam rupa kadamayam dadati svapadantikam Deham Shri Guru Shri Yathapadamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamcha Shri Rupam Sakrajatam Sahagana Rajnapanditam Sadevam Sadvaitam Sapadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakanitam Hey Krishna Krishna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostate Sapta Kanchana Gauranye Radhe Vrindavanishwari Vrishabhanu Tare Devi Janamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpa Tarubhyasya Kripa Sindhu Vaye Vata Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
So you're reading Bhagavad Gita chapter 10, Opulence of the Absolute, text number 4 and 5. Buddhir jnanam asamoha shyama satyam damas shama. Chapter 10, that's text 450, is it? And this book is 508. Different book. Okay, we'll chant the Sanskrit. Buddhir jnanam asamoha shyama satyam damah shama sukham dukham bhavo bhavo Vayam cha vayam eva cha
Vayam cha vayam eva cha
Ahimsa samata tushti
Ahimsa samata tushti
Tapo dhanam yasho yasha
Tapo dhanam yasho yasha
Bhavanti bhava bhutanam
Bhavanti bhava bhutanam
Mata eva pritagvida.
Mata eva pritagvida.
So, translation. Intelligence, knowledge, freedom from doubt and delusion, forgiveness, truthfulness, control of the senses, control of the mind, happiness and distress, birth, death, fear, fearlessness, nonviolence, equanimity, satisfaction, austerity, charity, fame and infamy. All these various qualities of living beings are created by me alone. So Krishna is describing the different qualities. You already began this purport? Yeah? Do you know how far you've gone? You did three qualities. So the first three, intelligence, knowledge, and then freedom from doubt and delusion. You did all those? Okay, so then... So that takes us into the second, that paragraph, the paragraph beginning, asamoha, asamoha, freedom from doubt and delusion. You already discussed that one. Then it goes into shama, tolerance. Shama, tolerance and forgiveness should be practiced. One should be tolerant and excuse the minor offenses of others. Excuse the minor offenses of others. Well, that's important. If we get offended sometimes, little things, you know, not doesn't help us. Yet, Lord Chaitanya said, do you remember in the Shikshastikam what Lord Chaitanya says about tolerance? How tolerant we should be? The example of tolerance? Yeah. Yeah, like a tree. Tolerant is the tree, right. So why are the trees tolerant? What do they talk? No? Yeah?
They can withstand any kind of
climatic
conditions.
Yes.
They never process, and then you bring them down
also,
they don't
process. Cut them down. Yeah. Right. Yeah, good. And they give fruit and flowers.
Even when you throw it, they only give you fruit.
Yeah. Yeah, I throw stones at them and they drop the fruit and flowers. Yeah. And we can break branches off them. Yeah, so there are examples of tolerance. Are you all tolerant?
No.
Really? Well, you're honest. Yeah. But we should feel bad about that, you know. We should think that actually we should try to develop this, you know. You know, most people, they never even think about it. The, you know, thought of forgiving people, you know, never even comes in their mind. All they think about is revenge, and I'll get my own back on that person. You know, tit for tat, you know, they did this to me, I'll get revenge on them. But actually, you know, that just makes things worse. You know, the more we try to get revenge on others, the more we increase the reactions which come back on us. When things happen to us, when somebody does something bad to us, you know, we should think, you know, I must have deserved it. We should think like that. We should think I deserved it. And actually, devotees should think, you know, when we suffer, we should think, actually, I deserve to suffer much more. But Krishna is reducing my suffering. He's only giving me a little suffering. But actually, I'm such a sinful rascal that I deserve to suffer much more. Devotee, we should think like that. And that will help us to be more tolerant. Because when we're not tolerant, you know, we don't tolerate, then people, you know, we try to go back to people and then they come worse. You know, and the whole cycle, the whole thing blows up much more. But if we just tolerate, then it's finished, you know. Then people don't want. But if people see that they can get you angry, then they'll make a point of getting you angry and more and more. So we should be careful not to get too much influenced by little things which other people do to us, you know. It's the material world. It just shows the ignorance of people, that they try to be nasty to each other and that, you know. But why should we care, you know? We're not the body. We're the soul. The more we can think of ourselves as a soul, you know, lower than the straw in the street, that we're a soul. When we have our ego in proportion to the soul, then, you know, we can tolerate many things. And they won't worry us. Even in Christianity, they teach about this. You know, Jesus taught about turning the other cheek. Huh? Yeah, yeah. Somebody strikes you, you know, you just turn the other cheek. You know, you don't have a go back at them. So tolerance is, you know, would make it life, make the world a lot better place if people could be more tolerant. But because everyone wants to exploit each other and try to run the other person down, so the whole world is caught up in so many struggles and conflicts and battles, and everyone wants to show they're better than the other. So we have to try to understand this spiritual knowledge. You know, we should try to practice tolerance, not getting angry about little things. You know, how to do it? It takes practice. You know, next time we're not tolerant, then we should regret it. We should feel bad about it, and we should think, I should have been more tolerant. Krishna said in Bhagavad Gita to be tolerant, and Lord Chaitanya said we have to be tolerant. You know, they say that that verse about being tolerant and lower than the straw in the street, we should have that verse strung on a thread and wear it around our neck to constantly remind ourselves. Maybe you can do that, you know. Write it on some thread, you know, around your neck. So then you may not see it if it's around your neck. Yeah? So you have to stick it in front of your mirror or something, you know, in front of your kitchen where you're cooking. Yeah, you write that verse so you can constantly see it. You know, put it on the fridge door. You know, these kind of. To help you to remember. Okay. So we'll go on to the next one. Satyam, truthfulness. Truthfulness means that facts should be presented as they are for the benefit of others. Facts should not be misrepresented. According to social conventions, it is said that one can speak the truth only when it is palatable to others, but that is not truthfulness. The truth should be spoken in a straightforward way so that others will understand actually what the facts are. If a man is a thief, and if people are warned that he is a thief, that is truth. Although sometimes the truth is unpalatable, one should not refrain from speaking it. Truthfulness demands that the facts be presented as they are for the benefit of others. That is the definition of truth. Hare Krishna. Have you heard this saying? You know this in Sanskrit, they say satyam bruyat priyam bruyat. Is it? Satyam bruyat. That when you speak the truth, it should be priya, it should be pleasing. You know, this is a saying, you know, that Prabhupada said it's a social convention that one should speak the truth which is palatable. And you know, but Prabhupada says even sometimes things which are not palatable, you know, you should speak them. But a devotee, as devotees, you know, we don't want to speak the truth in a way just to hurt and give pain to others. If we can speak the truth and at the same time make it palatable, then that is better. You see? To tell the truth, but at the same time to put it in a way in which it can be acceptable and easily digested, palatable or pleasing, you know. But if you speak the truth just for the sake of hurting and giving pain, that's not very nice, you see. So, there was an instance, actually. There was an instance about this. Prabhupada quoted this. It was in relation to the talk with Ballabha Acharya. Are any of you from Ballabha? Are you Ballabha? Huh? You're from Ballabha Acharya, yeah? So, Ballabha Acharya was a friend of Lord Chaitanya. You see, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, you can read how Ballabha Acharya met Lord Chaitanya. They met first of all at the Prayag, at Allahabad, you know, the Sangam. Because Ballabha Acharya had a house very near to the Trivedi, near to that Sangam. He has one house there. Have you been there? No, I went there. When I was at the Kumbh Mela one time, we went to see Balabhacharya's house. It's like a temple now, you know, but he used to live there. They have made that temple now. And he met Lord Chaitanya there. He heard Lord Chaitanya had come to the Trivedi, and he went there to meet Lord Chaitanya, and then he brought him to his house. They were friends, because naturally they're both such great devotees of Krishna. So there was some discussion anyway between Balabhacharya and Lord Chaitanya. And then later on they met again at Jagannath Puri. Balabhacharya had come to Jagannath Puri and met Lord Chaitanya there also. So we have to, you know, there was some discussion between Lord Chaitanya and Balabhacharya, and Lord Chaitanya corrected the situation. So the whole thing was published in the Back to Godhead magazine, and some people didn't understand it. They didn't understand what was happening between Lord Chaitanya and Balabhacharya, and they thought there was some criticism. Yeah. Oh, you know the whole story. So they thought there was some criticism of Balabhacharya, but Prabhupada said actually they were friends. You know, the two men were friends. Lord Chaitanya and Balabhacharya were very good friends. And Balabhacharya did not take it badly. You know. So this is the idea. That you have to speak the truth. You want to speak the truth, but at the same time we should be able to put it in a way in which people can accept it. Just like Prabhupada sometimes would go to a Lions Club and he would talk to the people about how everybody is like hogs, dogs, camels, and ants. You know? And Srimad Bhagavatam, Sukadeva Goswami says like that, you know, that people are all hogs, dogs, camels, and asses. You know? Hogs eat anything, they eat any type of food. You offer them some nice halava, they will say, no, give me soup. And hogs, dogs, you know, like we all know about what dogs are like. You know, they have no standard of cleanliness. And camels, you know, camels, because camels, they eat thorns. And they taste the blood of their tongues, and they think the thorns are very nice. And then asses, foolish donkeys, you know, the symbol of stupidity, the donkey, carries a heavy load to eat some grass. So Prabhupada would talk to all these people and say, just like hogs, dogs, camels, and that. And after the lecture, all the men would clap and say, very good, Swamiji. You know? You know, they would like it, you know? You know, Prabhupada thought it was quite funny himself. He said, I have called them all hogs, dogs, camels, and asses. And they have applauded. So that is expert, you know, when you can tell the truth and people, very nice. You know, if you try to tell your husband these things, you know, they may get a bit upset. Anyway, this is the idea, you know, we have to be able to teach, to preach to people in such a way that they, you know, that they can accept it easily. If you just all the time attack people and then they get offended, then that's not very good, you know. But if somehow you can present it to them, you know, the teaching of Krishna consciousness, if you can present it in such a nice way that it is pleasing to them, then that is very good. That requires some practice, some expertise, you know, to make it and to tell the truth. Tell people, you know, we're all servants of Krishna, we're not the body, we're wasting our life serving the senses. And if people can accept it, you know, we have to judge the success of everything by the result, right? Phalena pariyachet, right? You judge the success by the result. the things we're doing, we can tell if it's a good result, if people take it up. If people get offended, then that's not good. So we have to try to teach them in a way which will make it nice for them to understand. So Prabhupada was expert at that, you know, he could do it. We have to try to learn how to do it. You have any problems with this, speaking the truth? This is one of the principles of religion. You know, four principles, the four pillars of religion. Cleanliness. What are the other things? Yes. And mercy, yes. Cleanliness, mercy, austerity, truthfulness. These are the four legs of religion. So in the Kali Yuga, there's only a portion of truthfulness remaining. And that is diminishing every day. We know how much lying propaganda goes on, especially by, you know, politicians and the so-called leaders of society, that they're all they will make so many promises, you see. Before the election, they will make many promises. Then after the election, then all forgotten. Even husband and wife make many promises. You know, at the time of marriage, they make vows and like that. But then after the marriage, it's all forgotten. Maharaj Yudhisthira was famous that he could never tell a lie also, you know. We all know that story from Mahabharata. For him to tell a lie even when Krishna asked him was very difficult. He couldn't
very
do it. Yeah. But what is the problem with telling lies? Even it starts off with little lies, you see, and then it gets bigger. This is the problem. Becomes a habit. Becomes habit forming. And the little lie grows into the big lie. But sometimes it is justified. You know, Prabhupada, they tell a story. There was one man, he was carrying a lot of treasure and he was being chased by some thieves. So he ran past the house of a brahmana and he went into some trees behind the brahmana's house. So the thieves came running and then they asked the brahmana, "Where did that man go?" So this brahmana vowed he would never tell a lie, So he told them, he went in there. So they went in there, they found the man, they killed him and took all the treasure. So the brahmana had to take karma for that. So that sometimes it, you know, to save the life of someone, sometimes it, you know, they're not justified. But as you've pointed out, you know.
But who justifies what is right and what is wrong?
Yeah. Yes, that's the thing. Yeah. What is the standard?
What is the, how? I mean, to say for me, if I justify something, my own self, that how do we know what we are doing is right or wrong?
Yeah. How do we know?
Like I follow my husband. If my husband tells me don't do this, that means I'm doing wrong. I like mine is that, that I have to tell him everything, no matter what.
Yeah.
I know I'm going. I'm in for a scolding. I know he's going to get mad at me, but I have to tell him. So in my book, if I'm doing something which I cannot tell him, that itself is wrong. So at least I go that way. But otherwise, I don't know how.
He definitely wouldn't make a businessman. You know, somebody who doesn't tell lies, you have a hard
because
time
his,
business.
Because his honesty, he's come up a lot. Because he's very honest.
He's come up a lot.
Yeah, that's right.
But not doing business. come up a lot in a company, but not doing business.
Yeah.
You have a business.
Yeah.
Really?
But that is from day one.
Surprising, yeah.
So how should one know justification? How to justify one's own actions?
Well, like that, if you can save someone's life, if someone's life's involved,
mm-hmm.
then, you know, then it's certainly justified.
Mm-hmm.
We should be willing to tell a lie, to save someone's life. Just to save someone's honor, you know, to make some money, then that's another thing, that's a different situation. That seems to be the standard. If life is involved, then it's justified.
It's okay if your conscience allows you.
Well, our consciousness is, you know, that is... Yeah, I mean, we're not in pure consciousness anyway.
Usually you don't do anything if your conscience will not allow. Normally.
The idea is anyway we should not get in the habit of telling lies. It shouldn't become a habit. There may be certain situations where it's very necessary. I mean, they told me in India, I don't know how it is now, but they told me in India that if you pay all the taxes you're supposed to pay, you know, you'll pay much more than you ever earn. You know, because the taxation in India is such that most people will always try to avoid paying the tax anyway. So they put so much more. I don't know.
Tax evasion is all over the world, not only in India. Even American people try, everybody tries to, certain
person. Yeah. Anyway, generally, truthfulness is to follow scripture. We should be truthful to Sadhu, Shastra and Guru. Truthful to the scriptures, the teachings of the scriptures. That is the idea. If Krishna wants us to do something, that is the highest truth. Krishna tells, you know, someone to lie, you know, we're willing to do that. Prabhupada also jokes sometimes about how his godbrothers used to go and they would talk about their own guru. They would say, our guru, he lived on tulsi leaves for 12 years. It was a lie. It wasn't true. It was exaggeration. But, you know, it was for the sake of trying to create a good impression. So like this. Okay, let's go on to the next point. Next point, the next quality is control of the senses. Control of the senses means that the senses should not be used for unnecessary personal enjoyment. There is no prohibition against meeting the proper needs of the senses, but unnecessary sense enjoyment is detrimental for spiritual advancement. Therefore, the senses should be restrained from unnecessary use. Okay, now what is necessary? You see, I mean, again, this is a relative issue. How will we decide what is relative? What is necessary for our sense enjoyment? Now, somebody will say, you know, the wife says, I want to go to the movies. I want to go and see a film, you know. And the husband says, no, I don't want to go, right? I'm just going to stay here and we can chant Hare Krishna, we can read the Bhagavad Gita. And the wife says, no, you have to take me to the movie. I want to go and see the movie. Now, husband said, no, it's not necessary. But the wife said, no, it is. Is it necessary or not? What do you think? Not necessary. Who says it? She says it's not necessary. Did anyone say it is necessary?
I'm an example of this song. For the sake of my children and the husband, sometimes what I do is, okay, once in a while I go alone. 3 months.
You have to go to the movie.
I sit there like I'm in my own world chanting and try to be in my world.
Yeah, they want to go to the movie.
Yeah.
And you have to go with them.
Yeah, and actually,
they wouldn't go if I won't go.
So,
for the next
occasion.
So, you want him to go, so you go.
Yeah.
Huh? He won't go if you don't go.
Yeah.
So why do you go?
Then the kids and he, both of them, they all have complained. Mama is not interested in anything. He's only into Krishna, nothing else.
We all face the same thing. Our children, they have all complained from each other.
They say you're what? You're too devotional. All of you have this problem?
I go alone, never like. If I want to go for a movie also, I will go away alone. Because we will never come with me anywhere. We always travel alone. Because I have a very, very narrow choice. Either I don't go or I go alone. So I chose to go alone. You know, my husband, he doesn't like, he doesn't want to go anywhere. No movies, and absolutely nothing, no traveling, nothing.
He went to Rishikesh with you.
Yeah, that was the first time. I'm really thankful, I'm telling you, really. The first time in 34 years married.
Well, didn't he bring you here? Didn't he bring you here?
He flew alone, I flew alone. He never tried to get
Alone. Take Krishna with you, huh?
Yeah. Krishna's there. Sorry, absolutely. It could be anywhere, not only traveling anywhere. He's telling me today. He doesn't stop me. If I said, I told him I want to go to Vrindavan, no matter what, you're coming, not coming. So he flew back, but I was there. But then he made arrangements for me to go alone also, but he made the arrangements for me. He will not, he will give me the money, he will make the arrangements, he will make my trip as easy as possible. That everything he knew, but he will not come.
He's the one who reminds her if she doesn't chant, you've not done your round. He's the one who wakes her up, get up and chant your round. He's the one who brings all his discount books, he's got the whole library in the house. Anywhere he goes, he'll get discount books for her.
Today is also your boy. I thought you were
stopping.
No, I'm not stopping.
No, but, you know, how do we balance this? You know, what if, you know, if the family are all objecting, you know? Do you just do like Sindhu? You make a compromise? You just go to the film with them? Sit and chant in the film?
So I have reduced my hands after joining because automatically I think it's on it.
So how the family taking it?
They go on their own. I say that.
And they don't mind.
Yeah,
they don't bother. Okay.
Yeah.
What about, you know, somebody is, you know, recently married, you know? Younger people just recently married, and then the husband sees the wife is really becoming and going to the temple all the time, and she doesn't want to go to the party and like that, you know. How would you imagine? How would that work out? You ladies.
One of my cousin marriage broke up because of it.
Marriage broke up.
Because. The guy she was married to before, he went completely into Hare Krishna. I don't know the details of much, but I only know that much. Because that girl married my husband's cousin recently, last month only. The same girl. But when he tried to find out what happened to her first husband, why was she divorced? So they said that her first husband went totally into Hare Krishna. So I don't know the details, but that marriage did break up. Since you're asking about the newly couple marriage, and I don't think so. They were married for maybe a year or two. That also I don't know the details.
Mm-hmm.
But I only know that much that Hare Krishna mein ghus gaya iske liye. But that was the word we expected.
There has to be some standards, you know. There are some standards, you know, like that. You know, we say we have regulative principles, you know, that's like the minimum standard. In the beginning of our movement, when they had the first temple in San Francisco, well, from New York, they made one in San Francisco. And then just at that time, the devotees were very new. So just near to the temple, there was a donut shop. So the devotees were always going there in the donut shop, you know. So Prabhupada, you know, he would go past, he would come to the temple, he'd look in the donut shop to see if any of the devotees were there. He didn't like them to go there, you know. We do find the example. Prabhupada gives the example one purport. He said that sense gratification is like salt. If there's no salt in the food, then the food has no taste. Mm-hmm. But if there's too much salt, then it's also not good. So there has to be some standard. But the thing is, not everybody is the same. Some people need more salt and some people take less salt. So there's a standard. You know, it's not the same for everyone. Now some people, they may have to go to movies, but not everybody has to go. You know, it's up to the individual. Just like the householder couple came and said like that, but that's not a standard that you have to go. You know, it's okay, somebody, you know, if they're really pressing you, you can go. But pick a movie which is not too bad, you know. Pick something reasonable. You know, sometimes people watch, you know, they like to watch this, what's it, National Geographic, they've got that channel.
Yeah.
So, you know, people will watch, they watch television, they'll watch that, you know, which is more about the animals. But it's not that you have to watch that. You know, it's different for different people. So that's the idea. You know, we try to minimize. If we can do without movies, you save the money, as she said, right? It's expanding, you save the money. You don't have to sit there in these, do they all smoke cigarettes in there?
No, now that everything is banned.
It's just banned in Dubai.
Malls and everything. No,
that
is a designated, but not in the theater.
Not in the theater.
It is absolutely
that. Oh, that's good. Anyway, I mean, we can watch a Krishna conscious movie or something. Try to see some Krishna conscious movie. You can watch the Mahabharata, right? You get some Mahabharata serial. And you know, they're doing so many things now.
Nowadays, that's the trend. All Ganpati, Krishna, Ganapati, Mahabharata,
yeah.
All the serials are coming so that yesterday only they showed 6 advertisements. One is for Krishna, one was Hanuman, one was Mahabharata, Ramayana. All religious movies or serials are coming out.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a
very popular
trend. It's a boom nowadays.
Yeah, even all over the world. In Thailand, in Bangkok, they translate it to Thai, and they have the, you know, they had the Ganapati one, and then they had the Nrsingha, the one about Lord Nrsingha Dev, you know, became very popular. Okay, the next one is control of the mind. Prabhupada says, similarly, one should restrain the mind from unnecessary thoughts. That is called samma. One should not spend one's time pondering over earning money. This is a misuse of the thinking power. The mind should be used to understand the prime necessity of human beings, and that should be presented authoritatively. The power of thought should be developed in association with persons who are authorities in the scripture, saintly persons and spiritual masters, and those whose thinking is highly developed. Okay, so control of the mind. That is, we see, you know, most of the time, how do we use our mind? You ladies have to think what to cook for supper tonight, right? Probably every lady, they have to think about these things, you know. When to go to the shop market and purchase the groceries and, you know, all the different things you have to plan. And that similarly, the men are thinking, you know, how to make money. You know, that as you're thinking about the cooking and the home and like that, the men are thinking also how to make the money to pay the bill. But Prabhupada said the mind should be used for other things. We have to use the mind to remember what? We have to think about the scriptures. It's important, therefore, to hear. You know, that you have to get a little time to hear. Play the spiritual sounds, play spirit and devotional music, and things like that in your home. When you get time to hear, then you can absorb your mind in thinking. The more you hear about Krishna, the more we can remember, right? And we can fill the mind with thoughts of Krishna. Other, if we don't think of Krishna, then we have to think about Maya. We think about the material world. I need a new, you know, all the new things you need to get. You know, I need more jewelry. I need that. You know, and that's how the mind will work. And so we have to control the mind. We have to focus the mind on thinking about Krishna, thinking about God. And to do that, you have to hear. We have to understand the nature of the mind. Okay, Prabhupada goes on. Next one, sukham, pleasure or happiness, should always be in that which is favorable for the cultivation of the spiritual knowledge of Krishna consciousness. And similarly, that which is painful or which causes distress is that which is unfavorable for the cultivation of Krishna consciousness. Anything favorable for the development of Krishna consciousness should be accepted, and anything unfavorable should be rejected. Okay, so this is how Prabhupada describes this sukham, happiness and distress. Prabhupada has, you know, made it very clear in relation to Krishna. Whatever is favorable for Krishna consciousness, then that is acceptable. But, you know, some people say, well, what is acceptable? You know, they have different ideas. What is acceptable for Krishna consciousness? Maybe that new sari, that new dress is favorable for your Krishna consciousness, right? The new car will help you serve Krishna better. Again, these are relative things. Difficult to say, oh, you know, this is Maya. Everyone is an individual. But the idea is that we should be cultivating the attachment to Krishna. And judge by the result. You know, when you get that thing, are you able to serve Krishna better? Or when you do that thing, does it help? Is it helping you to remember Krishna? Is it making you more Krishna conscious? If you go to the cinema, did you remember Krishna there? Did it help you remember Krishna? You know, if we think only about the pain or the suffering of the material world, well, you know, we didn't have to go to a movie to do that. Okay, so, do you have any problems about this? The next one? Oh, next one is birth. Bhava, birth, should be understood to refer to the body. As far as the soul is concerned, there is neither birth nor death. That we have discussed in the Bhagavad Gita. Birth and death apply to one's embodiment in the material world. Fear is due to worrying about the future. A person in Krishna consciousness has no fear. Because of his activities, he is sure to go back to the spiritual sky, back to Godhead. Therefore, his future is very bright. Others, however, do not know what their future holds. They have no knowledge of what the next life holds. So they are therefore in constant anxiety. If we want to get free from anxiety, then the best course is to understand Krishna and be situated always in Krishna consciousness. In that way, we will be free from all fear. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, it is stated, Bhayam dviti abhini vishetasyat. Fear is caused by our absorption in the illusory energy. But those who are free from the illusory energy, those who are confident that they are not the material body, that they are spiritual parts of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and who are therefore engaged in the transcendental service of the Supreme Godhead, have nothing to fear. Their future is very bright. This fear is a condition of persons who are not in Krishna consciousness. Abhayam, fearlessness, is possible only for one in Krishna consciousness. So, what do you all fear? What do you fear? Are you afraid of having to go back to India?
Illness.
You're afraid of illness. Yeah, a lot of people are afraid of illness. That's true. Yeah. Old age. Yeah. But all of these things are inevitable, right? We cannot avoid them. Illness, old age, disease, death. You know, we're all afraid of these things. How to overcome them? What are you doing about that fear? We're trying to make ourselves younger all the time. Huh? We're trying to, what are you doing about disease? About, you know, if you're afraid of disease, what are you doing about it? Are you exercising every day?
Yes, I try to take care of myself a little better. I eat a little less.
Eat a little less? Yeah, more exercise?
Yes.
Yeah?
We try a little water we can do.
Less air conditioning? Drink more water. Those are all material solutions. We're afraid our husband might lose his job. Yeah, our husband loses his business. The business all goes broke. People cheat him and steal all the money. Could happen very easily, right? These things in this country, very easy. Business is such, and you know, the whole market can change overnight. Oh. She's not afraid? But most people are afraid. They live in fear. Some people are afraid to go out of the door. They would just stay in their house all the time. They won't go out of the apartment. You know, especially in a city like New York or something, you know, people are so afraid. They just live in constant fear, and they have so many bolts on their doors, you know, if you knock on the door.
Fear, right? What fear is that? Something is me. The fear of going out is some phobia.
Oh. What is that? Yeah, there is a phobia for it. What is the name for that?
It starts something with a Z.
I can't remember now. Claustrophobia. What is that? That's too much, right? Claustrophobia is where if you're in Hong Kong, you know.
Yeah.
Everything is small, you know, the ceiling's much lower and the room is much smaller. And every, you know, look out the window into the other apartment, you know.
Everything is small.
Yeah. Claustrophobia. There's so many phobias. So, you know, these phobias are all, you know, it's a lot of fear. And people have to overcome fear. But they try to do it by material means, you know, okay, we're afraid of people, so we buy guns. We'll keep some guns in the house, you know. We can't protect ourselves. But Prabhupada is saying here, this is the best solution, fear. You take shelter of Krishna, and then you don't have anything to be afraid of. Somebody was telling me recently that they were with one of their relatives when he had a heart attack and he died. And that whole situation, just being with one of the relatives when he died, when he had his stroke, you know, it was so painful that after that, he said, I was so fearful that it was going to happen to me. He became so afraid, and he didn't want to do anything. He didn't want to work. He didn't want to, he thought life was meaningless. You know, he was just so afraid of death. So ultimately, you know, we're afraid also. So what to do? We have to hold on to Krishna. You know, so what do we ask? We simply ask at the time of death, we want somebody to be there to chant Krishna for us, so that we can hear the name of Krishna. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, the story is about Maharaj Parikshit, right? He only has 7 days to live. So he prayed to all the sages there that I just request that you will all come at the time of death and chant the names of the Lord for me. So that is how we can overcome our fear. So living with fear. What is the most fearful thing? The most fearful thing is forgetting Krishna. When we forget about Krishna, then that is something to fear. Other things, they're not such a big problem. The thing we should fear most is forgetting Krishna. You agree? Everyone agree? Yeah?
Yes.
So, okay. Okay, next one is ahimsa, non-violence. Means that one should not do anything which will put others into misery or confusion. You see, here's a special definition of ahimsa. We were all thinking ahimsa means, okay, we shouldn't kill any animal. You know, we shouldn't kill the animals. We think this is ahimsa. But here Prabhupada says, we should not put anyone into confusion. We should not do anything which will cause distress or misery to others. Are you all non-violent? Do you practice ahimsa? Huh? You don't put anyone into misery?
You try to be good.
Huh?
You try to be good.
Try to be, yeah. Yeah, it's not easy to do that. Because sometimes our nature, our conditioning is such that we will say things which may hurt people. Even though we don't mean to hurt them, it may hurt them. We may say certain things to them which disturb people and which put them into some difficulty. So it's hard sometimes. That is austerity of words, austerity of speech. To say words which are not painful to others. Prabhupada goes on, material activities that are promised by so many politicians, sociologists, philanthropists, etc., do not produce very good results because the politicians and philanthropists have no transcendental vision. They do not know what is actually beneficial for human society. Ahimsa means that people should be trained in such a way that the full utilization of the human body can be achieved. Human body is meant for spiritual realization. So any movement or any commission which do not further that end commit violence on the human body. That which furthers the future spiritual happiness of the people in general is called nonviolence. Okay. So we see that Prabhupada is pointing out that there's often many organizations and different societies or movements, and they're trying to promote, you know, non-violence. But they do it by all kinds of material formulas. You know, they say, like, we shouldn't cut down the tree, destroying all the rainforest, and, you know, try to protect the whales. You know, the different, they have so many different movements, you know. There was the one to protect the whales because we were killing all the whales. And then it's the rainforest. It's becoming a bigger and bigger issue now. These people are very concerned about the environment, how to protect the environment.
Becoming warmer and warmer.
Yeah, the global warming, right?
Global warming.
Yeah, the ice cap, the snow caps on the mountains, they're all melting.
Coming down.
Yeah, they've all gone. because of the heating. So they're asking people, I think in Dubai, was it in Dubai, they're going to turn off the electricity?
Yeah, it's already done for next hour.
On Saturday, is it?
1 hour.
Oh, just for 1 hour?
Yeah.
So Prabhupada is saying here that actually the real non-violence though is, you know, you have to do a bit more than just tell people, okay, we're turning off the electricity for an hour. You know, what will happen, they'll turn it off for an hour, and then when it comes back on, everybody will turn the air cons on full because the room has become so hot. You see? Yeah. What was supposed to be a saving will turn into you're more extravagant. You know, just like during Ramadan, you know, we see the Muslim people, you know, they're fasting in the daytime. Does it mean they eat less?
No, they all put on weight.
Yeah, they all
gain weight. Any Muslim you ask, no, they say, no, I have put on 2 kilos, I have put on 3 kilos.
Yeah, because
then they eat too much after the
sunset. They sleep all day and they eat all night,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You know, it's supposed to be, you know, that they eat less, but, you know, the opposite happens. And this is it's the same with this, you know. So these kind of material formulas, you see, unless people actually have some actual spiritual activity, you see, there has to be this spiritual activity to properly replace these things. To just force people. You turn up, we're turning off all the electricity, no more air con for 1 hour. You know, it's not going to change people's hearts.
Just if it's trying to publish it in the newspaper, putting articles of the community requirement that allows Indians to have spiritual association, temples and land. So that if the more that we can, they will go to the spiritual organization, they will not spend into the pubs and bars and all these things. We're trying to put through the media.
Yeah, good.
We have only one temple, the Sinaji temple and the Shiv temple, and the line on any special day, the line is from the temple for how many?
Long.
Miles.
Oh my God. And it's a small lane.
People are standing all the days.
Single file
road here.
Oh,
yeah. People are standing in line to have darshan.
It's very
of religion, they take this as an opportunity to continue their bad habits. But the religious people, they're not like that. It's not that the religious people become affected by it. You know, religious people understand that this is not how it's supposed to be. But there is a need for more education. That is definitely true. We have to educate people on these things. People have to understand how to properly practice religious principles, things like ahimsa, what it means to be non-violent. Spiritual activities have to be there. Not enough, just some material formula, make some law, pass some law, some resolution. That doesn't change anything. Because the desire, the heart is the same. Yeah, we have to change the heart, right? So only bhakti yoga goes right into the heart.
We have to help ourselves.
We have to help ourselves.
Yes.
But we have to know how to help ourselves. Yeah. God helps those who help themselves. And if you want to help yourself, we have to surrender to Krishna. Right? This is the idea. If you want to help yourself, we have to surrender to Krishna. So these qualities, all these different qualities are being described by Krishna. They all come from Krishna. But we have to understand what it means. What does ahimsa mean? Because I know myself, when I think of ahimsa, I would just simply think, oh, okay, you know, don't eat meat. You know, that's, you know, ahimsa, that's non-violent. But that, you know, there's much more. It goes much deeper. It can be a much broader thing. Non-violence is not only just not eating meat, but in our dealings with people also. And not just only being pleasant with them, but helping them to experience spiritual happiness. That is really ahimsa. When we can give people spiritual pleasure, spiritual happiness, then that is actual non-violence. That they can experience the pleasure, the higher pleasure in serving God, in pleasing Krishna. How to give people spiritual pleasure? Well, that's not so easy. How will you do it? How do you give people spiritual pleasure? What do you do? Do you do that in your home? You have bhajan? You have, really? Very good. That is it. Definitely. That is a very powerful thing. They say Bhaktivinoda Thakur, one of our great teachers, he said that kirtan is the safest place in the 14 worlds. No safer place. If you have kirtan in your home, that is the best solution. If you can have that regular kirtan, chanting of the holy name of the Lord, very effective. You know, children in general, home in general, very noisy, you know, people always arguing and shouting and slamming doors and this and, you know, running. You know, home is, you know. So, you have to have time. You have to make a point of, you know, this is the time when we do our prayer, you know, and you get everybody to come and you call everyone and you do some worship of God, you do a little aarti and you get them to chant the holy name. Then the home, the atmosphere in the home becomes so transformed. It can really change the whole atmosphere just doing that. But it's not easy to start doing that. And it'd be difficult in the beginning. But you have to be determined. If you do it and do it regularly, and especially you get the children to come and they take part in the kirtan, then it has such a powerful effect. So nice. That is real ahimsa. Otherwise, it's just all violence. You know, you see violence all day on the television, and if you watch television, read newspaper, it's all about violence. Watch the news and read the newspaper. It's all full of violence. You know, everything on the internet is so much violence as well. You have to find something where to tune into the ahimsa, to find the non-violence. You know, you don't just have to, you know, you see Jains practice ahimsa, right? Mm. You know, how do they do it? They have ahimsa silk, right?
Yeah, they don't
sell silk. They don't need
anything which is grown underground.
Yeah, supposed to.
Yeah. They do not eat anything which is the carrot. You know, and they will not eat the Indian cauliflower. They will not eat the Indian cauliflower because there's sometimes the green worm is in that. But they will eat one which is coming from Holland.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. I have seen it from, I got so many Gujarati friends, all Jain, they do it. And okay, then in the world, some people, you know, they don't eat potatoes.
Yeah.
Carrots, adrak, lasan, like so many things there are there. But then again, one friend is eating this, one friend is not eating that. Like, you know, it's
Right. Yeah, right. Some follow, some don't. Summer strict.
They don't wear chappals, they don't wear shoes or slippers in the because it came in.
I was in the Bahrain airport yesterday and I saw a group of people came by. I don't know if they were Jains or not, but they had the all white cloth and, you know, nothing sewn, just a chadar round. The man was just had a chadar round. And
Hajj people probably do that.
Oh, Muslims also do that.
Yeah, when they go for Hajj, or when they go for Umrah.
That's what
they
do.
Then they go to Makkah for the Hajj.
They do that.
That time they don't marry. They need to get married.
Yeah, right. Oh, they also do that. Muslims
yeah, they also
do that.
Only during that thing. But these people, they otherwise also they don't wear. They, and they put that mask on the mouth.
They
don't
want to know.
So those kind of, you know, that to practice ahimsa that way, you know, it, you know, how many people, you know, it's not practical, really, you know, it doesn't fit in with life. You couldn't have a normal life and practice that kind of ahimsa. But here, Prabhupada is giving a reasonable type of approach, you know, quite practical, how to practice ahimsa on the spiritual level. That, you know, first of all, not speaking with anything which is going to disturb and cause agitation in people's minds. And also, trying to relate everything to spiritual activity. When we act for the pleasure of God, for pleasure of Krishna, then that is real ahimsa. There's no violence, no reaction. So to come to that level, we're trying to practice that. Okay. Have we got time for another one? Probably two. What's the time? Samatha, equanimity, refers to freedom from attachment and aversion. To be very much attached or to be very much detached is not the best. Okay, that's a difficult thing. Here we were thinking, you know, we should be detached. But Prabhupada said to be very much detached is also not good. It's not good to be too attached, and you should not be so detached. So, how can you explain that to me? How do you agree with this?
Walk the middle path.
Walk the middle path, yeah. What we tell people, you know, don't be too attached to your family, your children, or your money, or like that, you know, don't be too attached. But at the same time, you shouldn't be too detached. Yeah. You know, if you neglect, if you make the children don't feel wanted or don't feel loved, then, you know, that's also not good, you know.
Anything in extreme or not good.
Yeah. Right.
Extreme attachment.
Yeah, it's like that salt again. Not if it's too much, it's not good, and if it's too little, we have to know the right amount.
Anything in excess is
always
bad.
Yeah. But as you say, anything in excess is bad, but also if there's none there, that's also bad, right?
Mm-hmm.
So there's two sides to it. Sometimes we don't always appreciate that. Sometimes, you know, people get so attached 1 minute and then they think, detached. But then they are going the other side, being aversive. You know, some people, you know, what is it, like, a man falls in love with a girl, and then he has a bad experience. Oh, I hate women, you know. I hate women. Not going to talk to another woman again, you know. But then, you know, that also doesn't work, you know. You can't maintain that for very long. So there has to be some balance there. So this is the idea. Prabhupada says, the material world should be accepted without attachment or aversion. That which is favorable for prosecuting Krishna consciousness should be accepted. That which is unfavorable should be rejected. Again, this is the same thing. This is called samatha, equanimity. A person in Krishna consciousness has nothing to reject and nothing to accept, save in terms of its usefulness in the prosecution of Krishna consciousness. Okay, so this is Prabhupada's absolute statement, you see. Because Prabhupada is the Acharya, so he's saying everything should be in relation to Krishna consciousness. Now this may be a bit extreme for people. Just like, you know, you said the householder couple came and said, you know, we have to go to the movies. You know, they considered like that. Prabhupada may not have agreed to that. But, you know, they obviously felt it was necessary to go to the movies. Just like when people, sometimes when people were very young and they became members of the Krishna consciousness movement, they were fanatical about television. That television is maya, we shouldn't watch television. But then afterwards, you know, after they get married and they have children of their own and everything, you know, they also have a television. Because they feel that, well, you know, the children, you know, we want to watch the news, or we want, you know.
Everyone in the family should have the same level of
Yeah, well, I mean, in America, I don't know about here, but in America, you know, everybody has their own room. So they have their own television. Is it like that here, pretty much, too, you know? Your children got their own room, they got their own TV, they watch what they want.
So that's why my husband, me, first used to, I'm sitting in my room and watching television, my son is in his room watching television. My husband said no. So he never had a television first in our house. So now he bought a new television, and now he says, okay, now all sit together and watch television. Because otherwise they are in their room, there was no interaction as such, you know. But now, I mean, at least now in the evening, we all sit together in the hall room and watch television together.
You don't fight about what you're going to watch?
it is news and more news, that's all.
Oh, news, you watch the news channel?
Not me, my husband. So at least now we made it a point. So what is this, everybody sitting in their own room, and he comes home, exactly what you said used to happen before. So now recently only since I come back, at least we are trying now.
You're trying to watch television
together. Like they say, you know, like the family who prays together stays together.
The family who watch television together can stay together. Well, you've substituted the television for prayer. Yeah. If your son had his own temple room or his own altar, and you had your own altar, you know, that's reasonable. Good. Yeah. Yeah. Do you do your prayers together? Do you have an altar?
Yeah, I have an altar, but I usually pray in the morning. And
nobody else prays. Traveling is a good time to chant. You can get a clicker instead of a bead bag sometimes, you know. If you feel uncomfortable with a bead bag, you can get a digital clicker. And you can just click, you know, it can be chanting. But generally, if you're traveling, it's a lot. You get a lot of time to chant. Okay, here's an important one. Tushti, satisfaction. Means one should not be eager to gather more and more material goods by unnecessary activity. One should be satisfied with whatever is obtained by the grace of the Lord. That is called satisfaction. Well, we could say, well, we have to be satisfied with that anyway. even though we want more, you know, if we don't get it, what can we do? Are you all satisfied? Are you satisfied with everything you've got? Everybody's satisfied, huh? No complaints. All happy. All satisfied. Very good. Krishna's very happy to hear that. And what if Krishna takes away something from you? Are you going to be satisfied? You know, if your situation changes, can you be satisfied then also?
We really don't know. I really think that we have no idea.
Yeah. We don't know. We hope so. We hope we can be satisfied. If Krishna gives more or Krishna gives less, we have to be satisfied. Devotee sees everything. Krishna's the controller. You know, we do our best, we try our best, and ultimately we have to accept what is God's will. We have no power over these things ourselves. But it's important for us to be satisfied. In the Krishna book, there's a story about the Brahmana. You know, when Krishna, Rukmini wanted to get married to Krishna, she was supposed to marry, who was it, you know?
Shishupal,
right, very good. You read the book, yeah? So, Rukmini was to get married to Shishupal. Who arranged the marriage? Rukmini's brother. He was a friend of Shishupal. So, Rukmini sent a letter to Krishna. Krishna was in Dwarka. And she gave a letter to a Brahmana to take to Lord Krishna. So, when the Brahmana came there, Lord Krishna asked the Brahmana, "How are you, my dear Brahmana? Is your mind peaceful? Are you satisfied?" It's very important for a Brahmana. You know, we are all practicing Brahminical culture. Krishna consciousness is also Brahminical culture. We should cultivate as devotees of Krishna, Vaishnavas. Vaishnavas should have the qualities of the Brahmana. The quality of the Brahmana is to have peaceful mind. We should feel peace. To be peaceful, we have to be satisfied. If we're not satisfied, mind is not peaceful. Mind will not be peaceful. So very important to keep our mind peaceful. And the best thing to keep our mind peaceful, you have to chant. We have to absorb the mind in the chanting, the holy name. It's the best medicine. There's no other medicine. Only by chanting we will find real satisfaction. The material things, you know, you may have a wardrobe full of so many nice clothes, and you have a line of men all waiting to take you out, you know. But you won't be satisfied, you know. It doesn't matter how many men you date, and how many lovers you have, and how many clothes you have in your wardrobe. You won't be satisfied. You can't get peace of, you know, you're not satisfied. Because our soul is not satisfied. We're neglecting the soul. The need of the soul is to find spiritual satisfaction. So this is how you have to cultivate this satisfaction by chanting Hare Krishna, by understanding we're not the body, we're the soul. Our soul is the servant of Krishna. Okay, the next one, tapa, means austerity or penance. There are many rules and regulations in the Vedas which apply here, like rising early in the morning, taking a bath. Sometimes it is very troublesome to rise early in the morning, but whatever voluntary trouble one may suffer in this way is called penance. Similarly, there are prescriptions for fasting certain days of the month. One may not be inclined to practice such fasting, but because of his determination to make advancement in the science of Krishna, he should accept such bodily troubles when they are recommended. However, one should not fast unnecessarily or against Vedic injunction. One should not fast for some political purpose that is described in Bhagavad Gita as fasting in ignorance. And anything done in ignorance or passion does not lead to spiritual advancement. everything done in the mode of goodness does. However, and fasting done in terms of the Vedic injunctions enriches one in spiritual knowledge. So, do you like fasting?
Nothing.
Are you fasting from meat, fish and eggs? Yes? You're fasting meat, fish and eggs, right? Very good. You're fasting from meat, fish and eggs. That's amazing. So long as you're fasting from meat, fish and eggs. What about rising early? How about that one? Oh. What is early? What constitutes early? What time do you have to get up by?
Sunrise.
That if you get you have to get up when the baby wakes up, right? Feed the baby. When it's time to feed the baby, then you get up. Before sunrise is early. That's early. You can get up before sunrise. You know, some places the sunrise is very late, you know. If you're in Malaysia, the sunrise is 7:30. And in the winter time, you know, in England, sunrise is 9 o'clock or 10 o'clock. Sorry? Brahma Muhurta, there's a period called Brahma Muhurta. It's auspicious time, 1.5 hours before sunrise. How many hours do you need to sleep a day? 8 hours, usually. You get 8 hours. Eight or six. 8 hours. 10 hours. 8 is sufficient. Yeah, it should be. 8 should be more. Yeah. What about the children? How many hours do they sleep? They need 8. They should get 8. Yeah, some. In Krishna consciousness, Prabhupada, like, said between, said 6 or 7 hours should be enough. If you have 8 hours, it's okay, not bad. But don't sleep more. That should be more than 8 hours. Because every day, then we think about how many hours we sleep, in a year. You know, so many months are spent sleeping. If we sleep 8 hours a day, is 1/3 of the day. So that's, 1/3 of a year, 4 months a year. So, in Krishna consciousness, we think about time. Time is a very valuable thing. What does Chanak, you know any sayings about time?
Time is money.
Time is money,
time is
money.
Yeah. Time is money.
Yeah.
Time and
Thai wait for no man. Yeah. Money is the honey, right? Money. Money, you see, money is the honey, but time is sweet, time is more valuable than money. Chanakya said, one moment lost cannot be bought back for any amount of wealth. In Chinese, they say that time moves like an arrow. It moves so fast, you don't see it move. And they say also in Chinese, they say, an ounce of gold cannot buy 1 ounce of time. Or 1 inch of gold cannot purchase 1 inch of time. Ji chun ding nan mai chun wang ying. Time. So time is a valuable thing. So be careful. We have, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna said about sleeping, one cannot be a yogi. What?
Sleep too much
or? Or sleep too little. If he sleeps too much or sleep too little. Eat too much or eat too little. If you eat too much, what do you get? Hepatitis. No, diabetes. Diabetes. Any diabetics here? Nobody diabetic? Very good. Be careful. And if you eat too little, what do you get? TB. TB. Yeah. In China, we have a lot of TB people. A lot of people get wrong.
How about the same people who sleep only 2 hours?
Who?
The animated souls who sleep only 2 hours.
Well, they sleep. They only need to sleep 2 hours. You see, they can...
That's like not too little for them.
Yeah, for them it's not too little. Alright, amen. Yep. So, Prabhupada told us, he said, when he was a young man, he gave up mating and defending. And then in his old age, he gave up, he could not eat or sleep also. In his old age, you know, he couldn't eat, he could not digest anything, and he could not sleep also. Some people, we had one lady in our temple in another place, she could not sleep. She did not sleep for more than a year, could not sleep at night. Some people, their minds are so active, they can't sleep. The disease, you know, we need sleep. If you don't get any sleep, that, you know, it means you're sick. And if you sleep too much, it's also not good. Sleeping is like death. So, we have to be careful. So, fasting, these are all austerity. Waking up early, you know. Morning is very good time, more peaceful. The morning hours. You know, if you go to holy places, people all sleep early and they get up early. You will see the Buddhist temple, the mosque, even the Christian church, they all have morning prayers, very early in the morning.
Morning
mass. Take advantage of the morning hours. Very powerful, peaceful. Not so much passion and ignorance. At night, everybody's going to the bar, go to the club. But in the morning, it's a different mood. So, take advantage of the morning hours. Today also is Ekadasi. On this Ekadasi day, we do some little fasting. Don't eat the grain. We don't eat rice, and we don't eat wheat. We don't eat these things. Just once every 2 weeks. Ekadasi, on the 11th day of the moon. So twice a month, do this. Ekadasi fasting. Ekadasi is a day which is very dear to Lord Krishna. Yeah, and if you do this, on the Ekadasi day, the real purpose of this day is to do more chanting and do more prayer to Krishna on this day. When you don't eat rice and grain, then you don't feel so tired. You don't feel so sleepy. After you eat meal, then you, I'm tired, I need a rest, right? Prabhupada used to say, a gentleman always takes rest after a meal. You know, it's actually good to take a rest after a meal. You need it to digest. But if you don't eat the grains, if you don't eat the heavy food, then you don't need the rest the same. You have more time to chant. You can do more chanting. and it gives our stomach, it gives the organs in our system a rest. It's their day off, right? The body needs a day off. If every day you put food, you don't give it a rest, it gets, you know, breaks down. So you should give the body a rest. Drink more fluid, drink more water. It's very good. This is a, in the beginning it's hard. This is austerity. But by austerity we get purified. We can get purification. Any questions? Anybody, do any of you ladies do the Ekadasi fasting? Yes, you do? Oh yes, very good. What do you eat? Sabudana, yes, sabudana is very good on Ekadasi. You know they have good dates here as well. Dates are very good on a fast day. They give a lot of energy. Okay, we will say the prayers now.
Rama, 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 Hare, Hare.